All right, nice to have you here for our Giants pregame, our first pregame of the year. And we got baseball coming up. The lineup is out for the Giants and the Dodgers. We know who the pitchers are, and thank goodness we know that. And it's only a couple hours before game time, and we know what's going to happen today. Well, we're going to bring in one of the stars of KNBR, and he's part of our Weekends in the Park family. And he's the star of the leadoff show every Monday through Friday on KNBR, 5 a.m., and that is Adam Copeland. Adam, how are you?
Marty, I'm good, man. It's good to talk to you on a day that we have baseball, man.
Yeah, no kidding. It's been too long. How have you gotten by without the day-to-day baseball? Has it been tough for you?
You know, initially it was, and it was really a bummer at the start. I'd have days where, you know, because I get off work so early in the day. You know, we wrap up the morning show at about 10 o'clock, and then, you know, I would generally walk home, and on April days and May days where the sun is out and it's 11 a.m., I feel like I should be able to turn on my MLB app and listen to an Orioles game or a Twins game or some AL Central matchup. And that's when it was really hitting me the most, I think, was at the beginning of the season when we'd have middle of the week afternoons and evenings, and it felt like there should be ball, and there was nothing. And then it got frustrating, and it got a little scary, and then we got overwhelmed with, I think, everything else going on in the country. So I won't say I was as desperate for it, but as we got closer to it again, I started to realize and kind of come back to how excited I was to have this as part of our lives again. And it's exciting, man. I know the last 2 days haven't been great for the Giants, but I've really enjoyed just getting to watch baseball on TV. I'm watching it right now. It's great.
Now, you say the last couple of days have not been good for the Giants. Why do you say that?
Well, Marty, two runs, a four-hitter last night by the Dodgers. Anytime you lose to the Dodgers, it's a bummer. I think a lot of Giants fans are frustrated with the new makeup of how they're doing things and the unknown of the pitching staff. And saw some comments from Kevin Gausman in Henry Schulman's piece from yesterday where he said, you know, I'm a traditional guy. I like to have a starting pitcher and a reliever and a bullpen, and not knowing when it is you're going to throw necessarily in a ball game, I don't think is always the best thing for starters, but it's the plan right now for the Giants.
Yeah, you know, my take on it, and Gausman expanded a little bit more, Henry tweeted out today, that he feels that this has been, you know, they're up against the Dodgers, and, you know, the Giants are trying all the tricks of the trade to kind of throw the Dodgers off. And once we get back to more conventional baseball, more conventional teams, that we will have a rotation and have relievers in the middle and so on and so forth, as opposed to pulling. Where's Jeff Samardzija? Where did he go?
It's a great question.
As opposed to pulling people out of nowhere and putting them in the middle of a game, that is not going to fly. And I got the feeling Gausman is right, that after this weekend, I think they'll go back to trying to craft some sort of rotation, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, it kind of makes me wonder because, you know, we haven't heard Gabe Kapler say that specifically. And actually, even some of the stuff that he had said about the rotation, or remember last week when he defined his pitching roles by buckets? That was the term he used. He said, we've got the up and down guys right, who can get up through the lineup one time. We've got the sprinters who are going to be your one inning or two thirds of an inning guys. And then you've got your bulk guys. So he had actually alluded even then, saying like Tyler Anderson is not so much a starter. And then they opened with him yesterday. He said that Drew Smyly maybe would be one of those starters. And then we saw him come out of the bullpen. Kevin Gausman comes out of the bullpen. So I guess my question is, if they don't do it in the next couple of days, is the general strategy to continue this sort of, blob of a pitching staff really without any kind of definition to what a starting pitcher or a bullpen is? Is that the big picture goal, or is the goal eventually to get back to traditional baseball and rotations like you're talking about? Because, Marty, I'm looking around the game, and you look at the best teams in baseball, they're not doing anything like this. They've still got traditional rotations.
No, and also the comment that the pitchers are not built up enough for so many pitches. You look all over baseball, the starting pitchers were built up enough. Every other team did. So it leads me to believe that this is their plan, is to not ramp these guys up early and maybe build it up as this thing develops. But my feeling is what you just said, and that is that they will have to go to a regular rotation. You cannot go through 60 games. You can't go through 20 games like this, because you can't be pulling starters out and putting them in the middle of the game. If you've got Derek Rodriguez or Andrew Suarez or people who could be swing kind of guys, fine, use them. But you can't do that for your big boys. You can't do it. And Logan Webb today, for me, I'm excited to see him. You know, he's a kid. He's 23 years old. You know, he's full of excitement and energy. You can't tell me he can't go 50, 75 pitches today. And if he's got his command and do a good job, leave him in there. There's just, I don't care if they hit 320 against him the third time through the lineup. I want to see the kid learn how to go through the lineup a third time. You're not going anywhere until you develop starting pitching.
Well, you know, and I agree with everything you just said. I think one of the biggest frustrations for me in the last 2 days is, and I know we can talk about the fielding, we can talk about the mental mistakes and the shifts and the not covering thirds and the rundowns, and I know there's a lot of fundamental stuff in the last couple of days that wasn't good with the Giants. But from just sort of a big picture standpoint, what bummed me out a lot was seeing Johnny Cueto kind of get into like one jam on the other night, and then he gets sort of taken out, right? They get guys up in the pen. Johnny Cueto doesn't have a chance to work out after the fourth inning to get more work. So you're saying, you know, if Logan Webb is pitching well and he's got 50, 60 pitches and they're not putting wood on the ball and he's not in jams, Johnny Cueto wasn't in any danger of – I mean, I guess he was in a little bit of danger, but it's what starting pitchers do, right? They dance in and out of it. They get guys out. You sort of set them up in your first at bat, and it is so important if you're trying to build a pitching staff like you're talking about to give guys those growth opportunities, right? And I don't know why in a 60-game season that's not at the forefront, especially with a young pitcher like Logan Webb. So I would love to see him get into the fifth inning, but I'm not optimistic that that's going to happen today.
What did you think of Bumgarner last night in the game? He pitched 5 2/3, 4 hits, 3 runs, and didn't talk to the press afterwards.
It's like I saw a quote about Mookie Betts the other night from a Red Sox fan who said, you hate seeing your Mookie Betts smile like that. It's like seeing an ex-girlfriend who's loving her new guy, right? That's kind of how I felt with Madison Bumgarner. I know he wasn't as sharp, but what did he go, 5 1/3 and gave up the 3 runs? And he was sharp early on, first couple times through, and then they kind of banged him around and got into that jam. But, you know, he's going to be Bumgarner. He's going to be a horse. He's going to be one of those guys who gets out there and, you know, 200 innings, obviously not for this season, but he's a guy who I think is going to continue to post those sort of bulk front of the rotation starter numbers because that's the kind of guy he is. We saw Kyle Hendricks go 103 pitches in a complete game last night. This is something that is still a part of baseball. It's more rare, but Madison Bumgarner is one of those guys who I think is capable of continuing that.
Well, 100 pitches last night for Bumgarner. 5 2/3, 4 hits, 3 runs, and Hosmer was the one who had the big blow, and Hosmer hadn't done anything against lefties for years, and he had drove in 6 runs last night for the Padres. I like the Padres. I think the Padres are a very dangerous team. What do you think about the new playoff format? You and I haven't talked about that yet.
I like it. I kind of like that we're going to do a few things like this. I prefer that to, you know, some of the other changes, the runner on second base in the 11th inning, the three-batter minimum, that kind of stuff. I'm intrigued by it. I really did not like a few years back, or was it 2012, maybe 2011, when they added the extra wild card teams and the one game playoff. It seemed sort of phony to me. And then we got it. And I know there are some people who don't agree, but I love the one game playoff. I love the inclusivity of that sort of postseason. And since we're in a truncated 60-game season, I like the 16 teams in. Now, in a 162 game season, I'm not sure how much I'll enjoy more than half the teams getting into the playoffs or top two teams in each division doing that. We haven't gotten there yet for the new CBA or the new collective bargaining to determine whether or not that's going to happen beyond 2020. But I'm intrigued for how this they're doing like a Selection Sunday thing, right, Barney, where the number one seed is going to get to pick their opponent. Is that a thing?
Well, you know, I'm not clear on that yet, honestly. And I've seen a couple of different stories and it's never been clear to me. Which would be wild. The first two top seeds get to pick their opponent. But I thought it's going to be 1 versus 8, 2 versus 7, you know, that kind of thing. But Larry brought this up yesterday, and I get your thoughts about it. I respect your opinion. You know, you get a number one team that's won 105 games, and you're playing the eighth seed that could be, you know, 82 and 80.
Wins, yeah.
Yeah, and it's a three-game series. And I don't care who you are in baseball, what team you are, and especially with openers and all the nuttiness today, you've got a pitcher. You've got somebody who could go out there and pitch a game. And if your guy, you know, Bumgarner goes out and pitches his game against the Mets or against Pittsburgh and knocks him out, you're done. And that first game, even though everything's in the home seed, the better seeds ballpark, all of a sudden, you know, the number eight seed wins that first game behind a great pitching performance. You're that number one seed's in trouble. And that, to me, is probably not the fairest thing. I don't like that.
You don't like that the number one seed could get knocked out by an eight seed, even though they
get
all three at home?
Yeah, because, you know, pitching is the game, and, you know, and every team has a pitcher. So let's say you're the Reds, or, you know, well, the Reds have a lot of pitchers, but, you know, take one team that has one pitcher, and all of a sudden that guy wins that first game. You know, now that you've got the team where you want them, so to speak.
Well, you know what would make it interesting is if this, and I think it is that Selection Sunday type thing where they're going to get to pick their opponent. If it does work out that way, that would make that opening round series all the more attractive, I think. So if you get the Yankees, let's say, as a one seed, and the Yankees stand up there and they say, bring me the Cleveland Indians, put them on my doorstep, that's who I want. Now Cleveland's got to go into Yankee Stadium. They've got to go play a three-game series, try to take down the Yankees. They win that first game. Now they're going, oh, you picked us as the worst team that you wanted to play. You thought you'd match up the best against us. I think that would be incredible for the game. And if it's a one-game playoff, I would agree with you. But if you're the one seed, I you know, and you get three games at home, I'm not going to feel bad for you if you don't get the job done. If you're the one seed, you should be able to go out and beat the team you select in a best of three. So, you know, that's baseball for me. That's why we play the games. It's a series. If it were a one game playoff, I think I'd feel different.
Okay. No, I respect your opinion. I'm glad we brought it up because there's been a lot of. You're the first one who's really taken that.
Yeah.
That approach on. All right, cool. Hey, we got more with Adam coming up on our Giants pregame. We'll take a break. We'll give you the lineups when we come back right after this. Adam, coming back, let's look at the lineup, get your thoughts on that. Slater leads off today, of course, with the lefty going for the Dodgers. He finally gets an at-bat. Solano at third. Flores at second. Ruff, Pence is the DH. Yastrzemski, Davis, Dubon, and Heinemann. What do you think of the lineup?
Well, it's one we haven't seen yet. It's a little closer to what we saw, I guess, against the A's, right, when we saw Sean Manaea pitch against them last week. Austin Slater's the one I think everybody wants to see. Five RBIs in that first exhibition game. They look like they hit the lefty pretty well. They were geared up, I think, to have a lineup that looked like this on opening day, and then Clayton Kershaw gets scratched. I think this lineup looks okay. I actually want to see Jalen Davis in there a little bit more. I know he's in there against the lefty today. He saw Stripling last night, the righty. I kind of wanted to see him in there on opening day, even against a righty. I never think the righty-righty thing is as big of a deal. Dubon at short. Crawford still, you know, I know they're doing the platoon thing. Crawford is not all that bad against left-handed pitching. But and then Heinemann at the bottom. I was surprised he wasn't in there last night. I thought Heinemann was pretty good 2 days ago, though the base running for Heinemann is a little suspect at this point.
No, the professor, hopefully we'll have the professor on tomorrow, and we'll be talking about Heinemann and his dash from second to third against the A's and getting hung up. You're right. Yeah, the team has been, it's been a sloppy team. And as I say, it's 0-2 and 58 games to go, and we've got expanded playoffs, and you know, the Dodgers are going to win the West, but anything else in the West is truly up for grabs. But it's not 0-2. It's how sloppy they've looked. That's what's bothered me.
Yeah, it's I can always handle physical errors. You don't like to see them, obviously, but you can deal with the physical errors. It's mental errors. It's things that you feel like you should, you know, when you're a little league, they teach you that stuff. They know where you're going to go with the baseball before it's hit to you. You know, picking up your third base, because just the fundamentals and the basics of the game. And I think when you talk about the Giants and how many coaches they have on the staff, that's one thing you have to be executing. You've got to be perfect at that. If you're not going to have the same level of talent as the rest of the division, you've got to do the small things. And so far, as you said, Marty, they've been extremely sloppy.
Yeah, no, they haven't done any of the small things except make small mistakes into bigger mistakes. But I like the lineup. I do. I Slater, I think, is you know, the bat is there for him. This is his year. Solano and Flores both hit lefties really well. Ruff, this is your chance. Pence, lefty, this is your chance. And then Yastrzemski, Davis, and Dubon. Dubon has been a little bit overwhelmed. Heinemann, you don't know what you're going to get. But with Yastrzemski and Davis in the 6 and 7 spot, call me crazy, whatever. I've been on the air too long. I think this lineup can score some runs today.
Well, it's going to have to. Two runs a run in each of the last two games isn't enough. I was sort of joking about the pitching staff last night on Twitter. When I said to you, Marty, that you know all the good teams appear to have regular starting pitching, and Carmen actually commented on it and said, they need to score some runs too. And I said, well, the pitching is part of it. You got to put some offense up, but one run a game for the last two games, pretty awful. You got to get some outs. The Dodgers are going to come to play. And they may score six or seven runs a game anyway. You may not be able to catch them, but you got to put up some offense. You got to execute in situations with runners in scoring position, less than two outs, and they have not done that.
I think this team can put up some runs today. I really do. I honestly believe that. Hey, Adam, you know what I did way back in 1998? Every day I did this day in baseball history. And on July 25th, and it's only a few minutes. I want to play it during our segment here. I think you're going to enjoy it. And it's July 25th, and it's a doubleheader, the Yankees and the White Sox. And Roger Maris, you'll hear what he does in this doubleheader. But after this moment of this doubleheader, the baseball world, and it's, of course it's July 25th, the middle of the season, really, all of a sudden took notice of Roger Maris and what he could accomplish. And this is from 1961. So it's the great Hall of Fame sports writer Leonard Coppett telling the story. And here's a short This Day in Baseball History. Hey, fans, this is Marty Lurie with This Day in Baseball History. On July 25th, 1961, New York Yankee Roger Maris, on his way to breaking Babe Ruth's record for homers in a single season, hits four homers in a doubleheader against the White Sox in Comiskey Park, bringing his total to 40 for the season. The Yankees go on to win both games by scores of 5-1 and 12-0. The homers put Roger Maris 27 games ahead of Babe Ruth's pace to 60, set in 1927. Leonard Coppett, Hall of Fame writer, tells us that Maris already had everyone's attention before hitting four homers on July 25th.
Yes, it isn't so much it caught attention because he had the attention. This ended a stretch of something like, you know, I checked it out once, but it's something like he hit at least one, averaged a home run every two games for a period of 6 or 7 weeks. And Mantle was right there with him, right? And I had 38 or whatever at the same point. So it wasn't that Maris wasn't recognized as threatening the record. He was. But you still felt that the Mantle might make it ahead of Maris. But what this did, these four home runs, which got to the number 40, and it's still July, that's what prompted Ford Frick, the commissioner of baseball, to make one of the really stupid decisions in the history of commissionership when he declared, as a result of that, well, if he does get to 60... it won't count unless he does it in 154 games because Ruth in 1927 was playing in a 154-game season. It made no sense whatsoever, and it completely destroyed the promotional value of the last week of the season when he finally got there.
Frick, of course, was attached to Ruth, and he had a connection to Ruth, and that was part of his motivation.
Frick was close to Ruth, written about him, had ghostwritten for him, and so forth in his sports writing days. But it wasn't just Frick and Ruth. Frick was a total representative of his generation and how it felt about Ruth. And the idea that this heretofore routine player, MVP of the previous year, no less, but still only Roger Maris, should be threatening the great Ruth's mark. It just didn't sit right. And since it was the first year that any team had played 162 games, nobody knew. Now, it's interesting. For the next 37 years, everybody played 162 games and nobody hit 60.
Leonard Coppett, thanks so much.
Good.
Roger Maris and teammate Mickey Mantle battle down to the wire before Maris hits number 60 on September 26th in Baltimore, and then breaks the Bambino's record in game 162 on October 1st with number 61 hit into the right field seats in the house that Ruth built off the Red Sox Tracy Stallard. Mickey Mantle ends his season with 54 homers. What a finish to a great, great season. This is Marty Lurie. Join me tomorrow for another day in baseball history.
How did you like that?
Oh, that was awesome. First of all, 1961, and Matt Leland, who runs the board, I know a lot. I don't know if he's on the board now, but he and I talk a lot about the movie 61. I don't know if you're a fan of that movie, the one Billy Crystal directed.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, that's a it's a great Barry Pepper playing Roger Maris. It's a really good view or scope, I think, into what Maris went through that season, and the 154 games, and it's got to be done in that number. And did he get close to him? Did he tie him in 154? Was that it?
He ended up hitting 59 in 154, and then hit number 60 in game 158, and then number 61 in game 162 off Tracy Stallard. But, you know, the moment, 40 home runs. I mean, you know, this is pre-steroid and juicing the ball and blah, 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 and all that stuff. But July 25th, a doubleheader. And I don't know about you, growing up, I went to so many doubleheaders. I love doubleheaders. And the Yankees won this big doubleheader, and Maris hit four home runs. It was a tremendous story for baseball.
I've only been to one doubleheader, but the fact that it was two guys on the same team, and Maris had won an MVP, I think, with the A's, or was it a couple of MVPs? He'd won with the A's or the Cardinals. He had been a hell of a player, but just never got the love and the same credit that he got in New York. I'm reading the book Ball Four, Jim Bouton.
Oh, okay.
I'm reading that book right now, Marty. And it's a good. I call it my bathroom book. It's good because you can read a journal entry in about 10 minutes or 15 minutes. But I was reading one where he's talking about knowing Roger Maris when he was playing in New York. And he says when guys in Detroit particularly would get on Maris in right field in the bleachers and they would yell at him. And he says the first thing Maris would always do is turn around and ask the guy, how much are you making? I'm making 75 grand. What are you making? So they'd always say, they'd yell to him from the dugout, throw your wallet at him, Raj. But that was what he went through. He would deal with guys in the outfield by talking money and paychecks when he was playing right in Detroit.
Well, it was a big deal every day. And Orlando Cepeda told me this, and of course Maris was part of the Cardinals, and Orlando's traded over in 66. Maris came in 67, and they won two pennants together and a World Series. He told me that, Mays is the greatest of all time, but Maris never made a mistake. That's how good of a ball player he was. Now, a Hall of Famer, if he didn't hit 61 home runs, probably you would not think about it. But he was that good of a baseball player. He just didn't have the long numbers that to put him into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, for the Hall of Fame, longevity or body of work is such a big deal, I think. And he did it for a great period of time, but just not as long as some of the greats.
Yeah, interesting. Well, I'm glad you got to hear that. And, of course, I love listening to Leonard Coppett. I did one of those every day for the whole season. How about that?
We're going to have one tomorrow? Are we doing this every weekend? Or,
that's a good question. Raph's got to go in the archive, so that's a very good question.
Well, Raph, get to work. Tell Raph to hit the computer and start clipping stuff up. Yeah.
Okay, all right. Hey, Gabe Kapler, you know, he's such a man of communication, and now he's responded to Gausman. Well, we love Gausman, what he says, and we're going to take this into consideration. Everything's wonderful in La La Land. Everything's wonderful, but you've got your clubhouse saying we don't like what you're doing, but Kapler tries to put him at ease.
Yeah, there's something to be said about understanding and hearing what guys are saying, and then it's almost as though they don't want it to be handled in the media. They don't want to handle this stuff outwardly. They want to handle it inwards, and I think Gausman was careful in his words. I don't think he was slamming the organization or Kapler. And Tyler Anderson didn't either. He said, you know, you want to start, you got to execute, you got to do a better job. But I do think there's something to be said about these pitchers and these players being creatures of habit. And if he's used to coming into a game at the beginning and thinks that that's going to be better for him, I think there's something to that. I think it goes both ways there.
All right, we'll see. It just seems to be that you can say whatever you want as long as we communicate. We'll see how long that goes in a major league club.
Let's win some ball games. Let's win some ball games.
And then all right, Adam.
Then it's all good, yeah.
Have a great afternoon. We'll chat with you tomorrow. Always good to talk with you.
All right, Marty. Talk to you then.
Very good. All right, that's Adam Copeland, and Adam will be a regular with us in our Giants pregame. All right, more coming up. We're going to go to the booth next right here in the Sports Leader.